veteran
and his emotional support Canadian
scream into the void about the Mormon Church. If you want to reach us, we are on Instagram at NotSoPeterPriesthood.
And you can email us at NotSoPeterPriesthood@gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. Enjoy!
Bye!
We're just like staring awkwardly at each other.
Just two morons looking at each other.
Well,
love it. Hi.
Hi. How are things? What was
Well, it's the last day of June. It's the last day of Pride Month, but we should carry pride throughout the year, just like the spirit of Christmas.
True. Listener land, this will be like, they'll be in July, so.
Oh, know. Yeah. Well, it's Canada Day for me tomorrow, so I'm talking to you from the past.
No.
Yeah. I'm not gonna do anything. I'm gonna make burgers for my children.
Oh. I'm gonna be up and on a retreat with my work for like 2 days and one night, and which will be fun, but the way my allergies have been this year, I'm like, yeah, it's going to be fun.
That's exciting that you're going on a retreat, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the allergies aspect of it. Take Benadryl.
And if I'm, you know, if there's other people that up there that have worse allergies than me, so if worse comes to worse, I could be like, hey, you have good stuff, you know?
Yeah, I've got some good stuff, and people are like, that's good stuff, and I'm like, I know, that's the only reason I survive.
All right, well, you ready for the joy that I have for you today?
Oh, I'm sure it's gonna be just glorious.
I've created a like this like anxiety for you that like every time
I actually had nightmares last night that featured you trying to get me to do something, and I can't remember what it was, but I woke up like,
well,
I need to rethink my life.
Why are we friends? Why does he do this to me?
Why?
Why do I put myself through this?
I'm a bad woman. I go to therapy. I've done a lot of self-work. Why is this my life?
All right. Well, today, so you've heard of toxic positivity, but I wanted to talk about positive psychology, which is different than toxic positivity. Toxic positivity kind of falls into it, but there's positive psychology. It's anyway, we're going to just dive right in. So this is from Psychology Today. Positive psychology is a branch of psychology focused on the character strengths and behaviors that allow individuals to build a life of meaning and purpose, to move beyond surviving to flourishing. Theorists and researchers in the field have sought to identify the elements of a good life. They have also proposed and tested practices for improving life satisfaction and well-being. Positive psychology emphasizes meaning and deep satisfaction, not just on fleeting happiness. Martin Seligman, often regarded as the father of positive psychology, has described multiple visions of what it means to live happily, including the pleasant life. Hollywood's view of happiness, the good life focused on personal strengths and engagement, and the meaningful life. Positive psychologists have explored a range of experiences and behaviors involved in different versions of positive living, including specific positive emotions, flow states, and sense of meaning or purpose. So I want to talk about this simply because, like, I think we focus a lot on, like, the negative aspects of leaving the church. And, like, I think there's just we'll get into that too. Psychology itself is very focused on like negative emotions and like how to deal with negative emotions and negative experiences and coping with those things. But how do we, if you focus on some of the happy things and what actually makes you happy and how that affects your brain and how it affects your life, and give you a sense of purpose. I thought it'd be an interesting thing to talk about. So,
yeah, for sure.
Let's see. Proponents of positive psychology have also sought to catalog character strengths and virtues. The 2004 book Character Strengths and Virtues proposed the categories of wisdom and knowledge, courage, humanity, justice, temperance, and transcendence, including strengths such as gratitude, hope, and humor. Identifying one's character strengths, such as courage, humanity, or justice, is considered an important step on the road to the good and meaningful life envisioned by positive psychologists. There are also positive psychology practices one can try at home to promote well-being. For example, gratitude exercises have been studied by psychologists as a way to increase happiness over time. Just what the name sounds like, these involve such simple actions as writing down each day three things for which one is grateful. Although the focus of psychology is on happiness and fulfillment, it is important to understand that this does not mean people are advised to push away their negative emotions altogether. People who are flourishing make room in their lives for such inevitable states of mind. All right, so, and then we're going to, like, in Wikipedia, there's, all right, positive psychology, the basic concepts of positive psychology concerns eudaimonia, a word that means human thriving or flourishing. A good life is defined by psychologists and philosophers as consisting of authentic expression of self, a sense of well-being, and active engagement in life. So, ever since, like, coming out, a big thing in my mind has been about authenticity and being my most authentic self, and trying, I think it started like this journey of trying to be the most authentic person and trying to find myself at the core. And I think that's a big hallmark of, like, all Eskimos, and that we figure out that the church is controlling us in some way, and we decide to fight against it. And because it's such a high demand religion, it's hard to find that version of yourself that isn't so attached to the church.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's part of why, like, Mormons always say they left the church, but they can't leave it alone. And it's because it was such a huge part. It's so entangled into our very, like, psyche that we have to continue to talk about it and the damages in order to pull that out of ourselves and get rid of it. It's like untangling jewelry. You have to keep working at it to eventually get to the end of it. And I think they don't understand that we're not trying to hurt them. We're trying to save ourselves, like our own self, and rebuild who we are as a basic person without the church being completely enmeshed in who we are.
Kudos to you for a psychology word, enmeshed.
Thank you.
Positive psychology aims to complement and extend traditional problem-focused psychology. So it's not meant to be like it's not meant to, like, take over other aspects of psychology, like the, but it's supposed to, like, kind of supplement,
like, work it in conjunction with it, kind of.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It concerns positive states, positive traits, turn the fucking page, interests, strengths, and character, positive relationships, and positive institutions, and how these apply to physical health. Seligman proposes that a person can best promote their well-being by nurturing their character strengths. Seligman identifies other possible goals of positive psychology: families in school that allow children to grow, workplaces that aim for satisfaction and high productivity, and teaching others about positive psychology. It's kind of interesting. Well, and it's hard as a Eskimo, like, family relationships are very strained, no matter what you end up with as an ex-Mormon.
Because there's still that damage. Even if everybody in the family's out, there's still shit that happened that we kind of need to, like, work through.
Well, and I think of my friend and her family, like, she was the first one to leave. And then slowly but surely, like, her whole family has left except for one sister. And there's still a lot of damage for my friend because of all the things that her family said to her when she was leaving. And now she's like, oh, I told you so, kind of thing. But they're like, okay, yeah, you told us so. And but then they're, like, still holding stuff over her head, you know, and it's like, there's a lot of nuances to it.
Yeah, like, I have a relative that I was, like, the worst of the worst piece of shit and spoke openly about how horrible of a person I was. And now they have left and they want a relationship with me. And I'm like, but you, I get that you were in a cult, but you still chose to say those things. Like, that damage is still there between our relationship. You can't just be like, oh, I left the cult and now things are fine. Like, you were still an asshole to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think so, like, psychology, if, like, you would go to the therapist, they would focus on, like, how to deal with the trauma side of that. But then in the positive psychology would be, like, focus on your strengths and what is going to get you through that, those things, so you can rely on their strengths to cope with it also.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably, at the end of the day, that's probably a healthier way to look at it, is focusing on the positive. I mean, not to the point where, like, you're having toxic positivity.
Yeah, but, and we're going to talk about that in a minute.
But, yeah.
There's, like, it's like a pendulum. You can go too far with the positivity, because, like, I think of when I was thinking about putting this all together, I was thinking of Pollyanna. Have you ever watched that movie? Like, ancient.
I fucking hate that movie so much. Why? My grandma. Oh. Okay, so, like, I have always been dusty, right? Like, this is just who I am on a cellular level. I'm a little bit sarcastic. I'm kind of negative. I got a lot of rage inside of my little But, like, I just came out of the womb. My father has said on multiple occasions, I am his cactus child. I'm just kind of prickly. And he kind of just have to know how to, like, handle me carefully.
Little porcupine over here. There's a book called How to Hug a Porcupine. And it's like the like, children and, like, adults or whatever that are, have that, like, prickly personality that they just don't want.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, like, I don't know, negativity and
yeah, like, I just,
a bad thing, but there's, like, some of yours is, like, trauma informed, as we've talked about before, but, like, I think
also anxiety. Like, I'm always thinking about the worst case scenario. So I'm not, like, gung ho, let's go. I'm like, wait a second.
And we need people like that. We need people like this, because it's otherwise we, like, you got these people that are, have no anxiety, and they're just, like, going
to jump into the ocean, like, no big deal.
Like, it, I feel like those people need people that have anxiety and that look through and see the whole picture and see what can go wrong, and they're like, maybe just think about that for before you jump in. And they're like, they think for 3 more seconds and then they jump.
Throw a rock to see. You know, anyways, my grandma used to put that movie on so often. It's Haley Mills, is it not? The little girl is played by Haley Mills. Because I think she thought, if I watch this beautiful little movie about this little girl, even she breaks her legs and she's still so happy. Like, are you fucking kidding me? She's so annoying. I hate her. Even the, like, one actress I really, really love, her name is Pollyanna, and I'm like, oh, I can't do it.
Oh, really?
Like, I just call her by her character name, because it just sums up my childhood trauma of being forced to watch Pollyanna.
Oh, man. I didn't know that Pollyanna.
The Glad Game. Let's play the Glad Game. Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about. The
Glad Game. And that's toxic positivity to me, like, because it's you're shifting your focus from, like, actually working through the emotions and the negativity or whatever's happening around you that's negative, and just saying, I'm just glad that there's sunshine today, you know. And it's like, okay, but, you know, you're also, like, you're being abused, you know, or something,
or whatever. I hate it. I hate it. So the glad. My mom, let's play the Glad Game. Shut the fuck up. I need to call my therapist.
This one would trigger you, but it. All right, here we go.
I didn't know you were going to talk about Pollyanna.
I didn't either until I just brought it up. So anyway, let's forget Pollyanna. Let's just take a moment. Take a little breath. She's a little flustered.
I need to talk to my therapist about how I hate Pollyanna so much.
I feel like you should.
Yeah, I really should, actually. This is probably something I need to address. Oh, but I think it's deeper than that. I think it's the concept of, Well, just be grateful God gave you this body. Just be grateful that you're born into the church. Just be grateful that you have your scriptures true. It's a whole bigger concept. It's not Haley Mills' fault for praying some cute little girl with her stupid little dress, whatever. It's a deeper concept of ignoring the bad and the hard and pretending it doesn't exist. That's where I, you know, that's where I have a problem. And I really struggled to take medication for my mental illness for years because I felt like I was giving into what the church says of ignore that. Only look at the positive side. If you pray enough and you sing hymns and you go to the temple, this problem won't exist. And that's not actually how it works. Yeah,
because you're just ignoring a problem that's just getting get bigger and bigger the more you ignore it.
Yeah. My brain doesn't make the right chemicals. That is a problem. That's something. I mean, it's not a problem. It's just my brain doesn't function the way typical brains do. No big deal. I can buy my brain chemicals at the store. But ignoring that and for years being told that I was doing something wrong and that's why I felt like a crazy person, I got a lot of trauma about that.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, also just like being a closeted gay man in the church is just like ignoring these feelings that aren't necessarily negative, obviously, but like there's such a negative light to put
in the church.
And so like you said, just pray it away, scripture it away, you know, go to the temple, keep going to church, take the sacrament, do all this stuff, and it'll go away. But there's no amount of praying or whatever that you can do to make that go away. And it's not that that's a negative thing, but it's also just like it becomes such a guilt-ridden thing and negative thing in your brain. So it fucks you up. So
it really does. Yeah. Yeah. There is a serious problem with just ignoring and not working through. And yes, you can work through in the sense of like, okay, we can focus on the positive, but the positive is I can go to Costco and I can get my brain chemicals. That is a great thing. That is something to be so extremely happy about that I don't have to suffer without them.
Right.
It's not ignoring it and being like, well, at least I have a beautiful life and I'm just going to pretend and grit my teeth and get through it.
Yeah. But positive psychology would have us focus on like the positive, our strengths in that those situations. So like you were able to like resilience and like that kind of stuff. So and we're going to, it's hard because like, I don't think you could actually integrate this until you've done a lot of work with the other stuff, with the like negative emotions. And a lot of the problem comes with the toxic positivity is people try to do it before they try to work with the negative emotions. You have to get through the negative emotions and then start focusing on the strengths and the positivity and be like, okay, I've made it through that. I can focus on how I was strong and I made it through that. And now I can focus on how, what makes me happy and what that does for me. And does that make sense?
It's like a wound. It's a festering wound. You need to get rid of the crap inside the wound before you can place stitches or a bandage or whatever. It's the getting the infection out and then addressing it.
Yeah.
You have to do it in the proper. You can't just slap a cute Spider-Man sticker on top of an infected wound.
Right.
You have to deal with that first. Look at us.
Yeah.
Man, we should have a podcast.
I know. We're brilliant.
or our listeners are like, yeah, everybody knows us, you morons.
Let's see. A basic premise of positive psychology is that human actions arise from our anticipations about the future. These anticipations are informed by our past experiences. So there is, and we can talk about this. I'm not saying like positive psychology is like a good thing, like all good, you know, and I think that
there's
elements of this that we can take out of it, especially as like deconstructing to be like, oh, I can, maybe I should start focusing on like what makes me happy and like the quality of my life and what is a quality of life for me. And listeners can also, like if they're in that place where they can think about that kind of stuff, then there is like I've had conversations where people there's a certain conference for Exmos that leaves the participants in a state of anger, and they want that to be riled up. And I think there's very harmful implications with that. There's no resolution. And as a budding therapist, I'm just like, that puts red flags up for me. And
But as somebody who lives with a lot of anger, that puts up red flags for me, because I don't like sitting in that. I like to get angry, get it out of my system, and move on from it and have some sort of like
resolution and decompression. And
I like to scream at my husband, get it out, and then be like, okay, I'm sorry. And then we hug and we're good. There has to be that, you know, I can't leave a fight unfinished of just being angry.
Yeah, there needs to be like a close the loop situation.
Yeah.
And
I never fight my husband.
Yeah, never. I never hear about them at all. Mm-mm. But the
but at least I have a husband with his socks on the floor, Jake. Isn't that so lucky for me? I'm a positive.
Oh, Pollyanna.
I need to go cry.
Let's see. Those who practice positive psychology attempt psychological interventions that foster positive attitudes toward one's subjective experiences, individual traits, and life events. The goal is to minimize pathological thoughts that may arise in a hopeless mindset and to develop a sense of optimism toward life. So they're saying that it's a little bit, okay, let me explain before you get all.
I'm processing. It's good.
So, it might seem like toxic positivity the way they're saying it there, but it's changing your mindset that, and not like, how do I say this? Your attitudes towards your experiences and saying like, oh, there was actually good stuff that I learned from that experience, even though it was very traumatic for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so that makes sense. Yeah. Like you can pick out the pieces that it's like going to anything. You take the parts that work for you and hold on to those. And like our podcast, we always say, if this resonates with you, take it. If it doesn't, we'll let it go.
Yeah. Also, so I think of this like with my mission. So there's like, did I love my mission? No, I hated every fucking minute of it. Honestly, 2 years of hell.
I'm in
Florida and it's hot and I'm doing stuff that I don't necessarily even believe, you know, looking back on it, like I was not fully invested. I went because it was expected of me, and I'd go through all these experiences. I got attacked by dogs. I got rained on. I got my bike stolen. I got, you know, all this stuff happening to me. I was living on $140 a month, you know, poverty level, like ultra poverty level. And here I like am talking stuff that I don't even, you know, like, and having a gun pointed at me and having like doors slammed in my face. Like, but then I did, you know, I'm still friends with a lot of my mission companions, the, you know, friends, I say quote in quotes, because like we're just on Facebook, you know, and we talk every once in a while, some of them, and
still have those connections though.
Yeah. And so I take pieces of that and I'm like, well, I wouldn't be who I am today if I didn't go to that, you know? So I do have experiences there, but I also recognize that that's a very traumatic experience for me. That's why I still have dreams about it. Because my mind is still trying to wrap my head around what the fuck that happened then, you know?
Yeah.
But it's also, so I just want to reiterate that it's like important to, like, negative emotions are important. And that's something that I'm trying to, I've been trying to unwrap for a long time now, is that like, I can be angry and that's fine. And I can be, you know, like the church is so very, so big on like, oh, don't be angry. Don't, you know, and just that's where the toxic positivity comes in. Just refocus and just be happy and whatever.
Play the glad game.
Yep. And the thing is, it's important to be, to recognize your negative emotions and why you're feeling them, what is triggering them, and then work through them. However, and then, like we said, close the loop and be done with it.
I feel like negative emotions give us information. Feeling anxiety is information, whether it is a made-up scenario and you need to work through why this made-up scenario is triggering you, whether it's you just in your gut, you know, like as a mom in my gut, sometimes they're like, no, you know, so there's a reason we get. And I feel like the church really hammers down on those negative feelings because they want you to rely on the religion and the church and your church leaders rather than your own internal crap, listening to your gut. Right.
Yeah.
And so
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I feel like there is information that to be processed from quote unquote negative emotions. And once we process them and figure that out, then we're good to move on. But in the church, you're never taught how to do that. You're just taught to shut it down.
Yeah.
Don't look at it and listen to your church leaders.
Yep. And so it becomes, like you said, more reliant. And the only quote unquote good emotions are found at church. And in the scriptures, and while you're praying and doing the things that they tell you to do.
Yeah. And if it's any negative emotion, like you're reading a scripture and you get that gut feeling of like, this is bullshit. You're supposed to shut that down. You're supposed to start praying. Of course, you're going to feel comforted in a prayerful, spiritual, meditative state. Yeah. It's all engineered to only make you feel good whilst doing what they tell you to do.
Yep. And that's why I think this is important to have, like, to focus on a healthy way of looking at that and like looking at yourself and seeing what is inside of you that is like strength and goodness and what makes you happy, what is your quality of life, positive relationships, positive institutions like that you actually get joy out of that aren't harmful to you, like the church.
Like a book club, a yoga class, you know, a garden club, whatever. The things that make you internally happy are good things to focus on. Absolutely. And finding those things that actually give you that pure joy is such a beautiful part of life. And everybody should have that experience. But you have to find what that is on your own, unfortunately, because, nobody can really tell you where your deep-seated joy comes from.
All right. So, let's see. The goal is to... Positive psychologists seek to encourage acceptance of one's past, excitement and optimism about one's future, and a sense of contentment and well-being in the present. So, I like that because it's... we can seek to encourage... So, accept your past of like... Oh, we went through this cult. We lived in this high demand religion, this cult, and we can accept it. We can accept the trauma that it, you know, that it put us through. We're going to work through that, and then we're going to have positivity and excitement about the future, and then also have a sense of contentment, knowing that we are in a good place now.
We were talking about contentment just like I feel like a couple days ago, weren't we?
Yeah.
About how it's such a nice place to set and just be content and not have that feeling of missing out or having to run after a carrot that you will never catch.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that's part of why, like, on the weekends I'm just like, I just like to just be at my house and quiet, and I just like to not feel like I need to go somewhere, because that's how my week is all the time, is like go go. And then
And that's how your life was for the first, you know, 20 odd years of you had school, you had activities, you had church, you had young men's, you had, it's just, you're so, Mormons are so fucking busy. They don't have a second. That's why so many left during the pandemic, is because they finally had 5 minutes to themselves to be like, what the hell am I doing? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So, happiness, in positive psychology can be defined in two general ways: an enjoyable state of mind and the living of an enjoyable life. Quality of life is how well you are living and functioning in life. It encompasses more than just physical and mental well-being. It can also include socioeconomic factors. This term can be perceived differently in different cultures and regions around the world. According to Seligman and Christopher Peterson, positive psychology addresses three issues: positive emotions, positive individual traits, and positive institutions. Positive emotions concern being content with one's past, being happy in the present, and having hope for the future. Positive individual traits are one's strengths and virtues. Positive institutions are strengths to better a community of people. So, I was taking in my undergrad, I was taking a It was like a community psychology class. Is that what it was called? It was very focused on like community well-being. And I liked that it was one of my favorite classes simply because it was like, it got us thinking about like ways to be involved in the community and like doing nonprofit stuff and like doing, and what the health of the community looks like. Like if you're, and how we are communal creatures, and we do long for connection. We want that, and we're only as good as our community is, you know. And so
we're only as healthy as the sickest member of our community.
According to Peterson, positive psychologists are concerned with I'm just trying to find where, because I feel like I copied and pasted some stuff, and then I'm like, oh, okay, this was, I haven't read this in a minute. So, all right. And then Seligman proposed three kinds of a happy life that can be investigated. Pleasant life, research into the pleasant life or the life of enjoyment, examines how people optimally experience, forecast, and savor the positive feelings and emotions that are part of normal and healthy living. For example, relationships, hobbies, interests, entertainment. Seligman says this most transient element of happiness may be the least important. So like having like a pleasant life is the second one is a good life. Investigation of the beneficial effects of immersion, absorption, and flow felt by people when optimally engaged with their primary activities is the study of the good life or the life of engagement. Flow is experienced when there is a match between a person's strengths in their current tasks. For example, when one feels confident of accomplishing a chosen or assigned task.
Okay.
So it's like when you find something that speaks to you, like a hobby or an interest or a purpose that's like really like is in you. It's like innate in you to like, you're just a really good at it. You know what I mean? Does that
like
make sense?
How I have gone from just like helping out friends keep their houses tidy to now having like a base of cleaning clients that I make money off of.
Yeah. And you find joy in that. And I do. You find like, I love how getting like your texts about like, oh, I did this and I did this. And you like got the lines in the couch from the vacuum, you know, and that to me is like a good life, like a sign of like a good aspect of your life that you and you're good at it and you get lost in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I'm in a house and when I walk into a house and I see what needs to be done, I'm like, I'm such a freak. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to make it look so good in here. Like I just, let me add it. But yeah, like I get lost in the like, I mean, I'm listening to like music or a podcast, but just knowing, and this is the thing, it's not just cleaning the space and making the space look good. It's knowing the mental load that I'm taking off of the family that lives in that space and knowing that they're going to have enjoyment from it and it's going to add to their life. Like, it just makes me really happy. Such a freak.
But that's like you're experiencing what they would call flow.
Okay.
You're matching your strengths to your tasks.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
Yeah.
How random that I just like fell in. I mean, I've been cleaning houses since I was 14, but it was just because I was 14. What was I going to do as a job? I was going to clean hotel rooms because I lived in a tourist town.
The third one is The Meaningful Life, Inquiry into the Meaningful Life or a Life of Affiliation, questions how people derive a positive sense of well-being, belonging, meaning, and purpose from being part of and contributing back to something larger and more enduring than themselves, such as nature, social groups, organizations, movements, traditions, belief systems.
Okay. Okay. So like, people like involved in like foundations that are creating change, women who start non-for-profit organizations to help women in poverty, like those types of situations. That's the sign of like a great life.
Yeah. Meaningful. And it's
meaningful life. Meaningful life.
Making an impact on something that's bigger than just you. And okay. I've always like lately, I can't say always. So lately I've been in the last few years, I'll say I always want to put myself in situations where I can help people and like be a part of something bigger than myself. And mm-hmm. so that's why I really loved working for human services. I wasn't like a social worker, but I was like doing like paperwork for them, like admin stuff for them. And it made me feel good knowing that I was helping a good cause.
Yeah.
And then like the activism side of like going to Pride and going, you know, participating in, when I was in San Diego, I was at the LGBTQ community center a lot because, and mm-hmm. then just like, I didn't volunteer there ever, but I went to like group sessions and stuff like that. And just being involved in the community made me feel good. And I've, when I'm doing those kind of things, I feel like I'm, I don't know, making a difference in the world a little bit, you know.
Absolutely. I think being a parent is also a big part of leaving your mark on the world, in the sense that I'm trying to give these children this deliriously happy childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And
good memories and
and just knowing and try my damnedest to not fuck them up too much so that they can grow and be a force of good in the world, you know, especially raising white, blonde, blue-eyed children in today's society. Like, just don't be assholes. You're going to have so many privileges just handed to you. Huh? Like, just recognize that you're privileged just because, I came out with blue eyes and blonde hair. Yep. Sorry about it.
All right. So in Seligman has like this acronym called PERMA is three kinds of a happy life separated into three different categories. And to summarize this theory, it's put into an acronym PERMA, and it's positive emotions, PERM. I'm trying to find. Okay. Engagement, relationships, meaning and purpose, and accomplishments. So, all right. Positive emotions include a wide range of feelings, not just happiness and joy, but excitement, satisfaction, pride, and awe, amongst others. These are connected to positive outcomes such as longer life and healthier social relationships. I liked the awe one because I was just like, it's like watching a kid, like when you watch your kids, like see something for the first time and they're so excited and they're just like, oh, that's so cool. You know? And I think adults lose that. We tend to lose a lot of that, that awe.
We do. We don't see the magic in the daily, like watching a ladybug crawl through the grass is so mesmerizing to my children. And we, as adults, we lose that. And then we get to regain that watching our children and seeing it, like watching them at Christmas time.
Oh, I love Christmas time with kids. Like, it's just
it's magical because that magic is back, and you get to, it's secondhand, but you get to experience that magic secondhand through them, and it's just awe. It's absolute awe. I love that.
All right. So engagement refers to involvement in activities that draw and build upon one's interests. There's a name that's big in positive psychology, but I am not even going to try it. It starts with a C, ends with an I, and it's like Russian. I don't know. I'm not even going to. Anyway, this person, listeners, you can look it up, but explains true engagement as flow, a state of deep effortless involvement, a feeling of intensity that leads to a sense of ecstasy and clarity. The task being done must call upon a particular skill, and it should be possible while being a little bit challenging. Engagement involves passion for and concentration on the task at hand, complete absorption, and loss of self-consciousness. So
it's like me cleaning.
Yeah, and it's finding that thing that like makes you just like glow and just feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to bring this kind of back to the ex-Mormon thing. Like, just I think once you get to a point where you're past the rage, you're past the like fuck you church. You know, I think we always will feel that. You know, and
stuff. Oh, it's always going to be in there somewhere, because again, it's still something that made us, and so it's going to be part of us for. Probably forever, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. Especially as they, you know, continue to put out bullshit that, you know.
Oh, my God. As they continue to make changes that make me...
Yeah, and gaslight the, you know, the yeah. expert community and yeah. the Mormon community and say, oh, we never believed that.
yeah. I can't.
But it's important to be, like, engaged in something that's not connected to that so that you can find your... You know, find what makes you find that flow. Find what's
yeah.
What's
find that. Engagement. Find your joy. Match yeah. your freak. I don't know.
yeah, exactly. Somebody gotta match my freak. all right. Relationships are essential in fueling positive emotions, whether they are work-related, familial, romantic, or platonic. As Peterson puts it, other people matter. Well, do they?
No, I'm just kidding.
I like how we both were like,
we were like, do they? They're fine, I guess. I don't know.
You're all right, I guess, Dusty. I mean, but really, like, I mean, you and I have like gone through a lot of deconstruction together. Like,
oh, absolutely, like, yeah.
And so that's a very like fuel. It fuels like positive emotions, even though we get each other rage, and I bring out the trauma in you, and you, and then you wonder why we're friends.
But I think that there's a lot of deconstruction that I've done that would not have been possible without you, without your perspective. And so yeah, people are very, very vital to our journey in life of showing us. Different ideas and opinions, and also holding up a mirror to us and saying like, you're not shit, like you're pretty cool, you're doing some cool stuff with your life, so like, you know, quit moping on the floor, get up and put on your big girl panties, let's go.
All right, so humans receive, share, and spread positivity to others through relationships. Relationships are important in bad times and good times. Relationships can be strengthened by reacting to one another positively. Typically, positive things take place in the presence of other people. I mean, yeah. Yes and no.
That's your thing.
Murder. Yeah. But that could be a positive thing, too, depending on who's... No, I'm just kidding.
This took a dark turn.
If anybody can make positive psychology sound dark, it's us, right?
So. We have a gift. Ah.
That's our flow. meaning is also known as purpose, and it answers the question of why. Discovering a clear why puts everything into context, from work to relationships to other parts of life. Finding meaning is learning that there is something greater than oneself. Working with meaning drives people to continue striving for a desirable goal. So, I mean, you have to have purpose in life. And I think a big part of that, too, for like when you leave the church, it's like, oh, what is even the purpose of life anymore? You know, because you don't most likely you're not going to believe in the three kingdoms, the plan of salvation and all that stuff anymore, because it's you get to a point where you're like, oh, it's all bullshit. So it's kind of like, I kind of think of like when I left the military, like when I got discharged, I was like suddenly without structure. And I went from a cult to a cult. We've already talked, we're going to talk about that another day. The military is a cult. And it's very structured. And so the first time I experienced actual no structure where I can just make my own plan and find my own meaning was after I left the military, and that I was 37, no, 30, how old was I, 30, 35? or six. Anyway, whatever. In my 30s. And I'm like, oh, shit, I don't even know what I'm doing with my life. You know, what do I do when I grow up? So, anyway. Okay, the last one is accomplishments. Accomplishments are the pursuit of success and mastery. Unlike the other parts of PERMA, they are sometimes pursued even when accomplishments do not result in positive emotions, meaning, or relationships. Accomplishments can activate other elements of PERMA, such as pride, under positive emotion. Accomplishments can be individual or community-based, fun-based, or work-based. So, like, getting my bachelor's. Anyway. Each of the five PERMA elements was selected according to three criteria. It contributes to well-being, it is pursued for its own sake, it is defined and measured independently of the other elements. Okay, so.
Yeah. Sorry, I was on mute. I was like agreeing with you. Sorry.
I know, I saw you nodding and I was like, okay, is there more?
Sorry, I keep like coughing, so I keep putting myself on mute, sorry.
No, I appreciate it. Listeners appreciate it too.
Snarf.
Let's see. The Character Strengths and Virtues Handbook of 2004 was the first attempt by Seligman and Peterson to identify and classify positive psychological traits of human beings. Much like the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders of General Psychology, the CSV provided a theoretical framework to assist in understanding strengths and virtues and for developing practical applications for positive psychology. It identified six classes of virtues or core virtues underlying 24 measurable character strengths. The CSV suggested these six virtues have a historical basis in the vast majority of cultures and that they can lead to increased happiness when built upon. Notwithstanding numerous cautions and caveats, this suggestion of universality leads to three theories. One, the study of positive human qualities broadens the scope of psychological research to include mental wellness. Two, the leaders of the positive psychology movement challenge moral relativism by suggesting people are evolutionarily predisposed towards certain virtues. Three, virtue has a biological basis. So it's interesting because I think a lot of times we think that like, oh, we're just we got lizard brains and we're just creatures that have like we're like animals that have evolved that and we are just trying to cope with technology and cope with trauma and cope with I don't know what I'm trying to say, but it's interesting to think of like virtue as a biological thing. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. I think it's more social. But
yeah, I think so too.
I do think maybe there is something to that. Our survival is based on having virtues and morals and like having guidelines of like, this is a good thing to, you know, don't murder. Probably a good thing to not do as a species, you know, don't kill off your own. And I don't know, taking stuff from other people, stealing, you know, it's generally not a good idea, even as in cave, you know, in caveman days.
Yeah. And I think the church tells us that without the church, we would be that way. Like that we don't have a moral compass without them. Here I am living my life outside the church, not murdering, not stealing, not, you know, committing all these heinous acts.
Well, even down to drinking coffee. Oh, yeah. You just left the church to sin and you just left and you've got the like you take one sip and you're going of alcohol and you're going to be an alcoholic. You know, like there's this idea that they're. You have to have the church in order to be a moral person, and that's not true because humans are we're not necessarily ingrained in us to be it's not biological for us to be destructive necessarily. All right. The organization of the six virtues and 24 strengths is as follows. One is wisdom and knowledge, which includes creativity, curiosity, open-mindedness, love of learning, perspective, innovation, and prudence. Two, courage, bravery, and persistence, vitality, and zest. Three is humanity, love, kindness, social intelligence. Four, justice, citizenship, fairness, leadership, integrity, and excellence. 5, temperance, forgiveness and mercy, humility, self-control. And 6 is transcendence, appreciation of beauty, gratitude, hope, humor, spirituality. Subsequent research challenged the need for 6 virtues. Instead, researchers suggested the 24 strengths are more accurately grouped into just 3 or 4 categories, like intellectual strengths, interpersonal strengths, and temperate strengths, or alternatively, interpersonal strengths, fortitude, vitality, and cautiousness. These strengths and their classifications have emerged independently elsewhere in literature and values. Right. Let's see. So this talks about flow, but we've already talked about that enough. The negatives, so flow was the, when the challenge of the situation meets your personal abilities, like we were talking about, like you're cleaning the house, it's part of your strengths, and you get lost in it, whatever. The negatives of that is, while flow can be beneficial to people, people who experience flow can become overly focused on a particular task. This can lead to people neglecting other important aspects of what they're doing. In positive psychology, they could be misunderstandings on what clinicians and people define as positive. In certain instances, positive qualities such as optimism can be detrimental to health and therefore appear as negative quality. Alternatively, negative processes such as anxiety can be conducive to health and stability, and thus would appear as positive qualities. So there is a way to look at, like we were talking about, anxiety can be a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so negating that and saying like, oh, anxiety is always a negative emotion or a negative feeling, then that's a problem too. A second wave of positive psychology has further identified and characterized positive and negative complexes through the use of critical and dialectical thinking. Researchers in 2016 chose to identify these characteristics via 2 complexes, post-traumatic growth and love, as well as optimism versus pessimism. So a second wave positive psychology was introduced by Paul Wong, and it focused on the pursuit of meaning in life, while he contrasted with the pursuit of happiness in life. Ibsen, Lomas, and Heffron and Wirth have recast positive psychology as being about positive outcome or positive mental health, and have explored the positive outcomes of embracing negative emotions and pessimism. So second wave positive psychology actually acknowledges the negative emotions too, and the positivity that you can get from negative emotions.
Okay, yeah.
So that is different than toxic positivity, where you just ignore
it helps you acknowledge and probably move through, rather than it's not there, just put it in a box.
Exactly. I just don't want to bore you with all the stuff here. In 2019, Wong, he proposed 4 principles of second wave positive psychology: accepting and confronting with courage the reality that life is full of evil and suffering. Sustainable well-being can only be achieved through overcoming suffering and the dark side of life. Recognizing that everything in life comes in polarities, and the importance of achieving an adaptive balance through dialectics. 4, learning from indigenous psychology, such as the ancient wisdom of finding deep joy in bad situations. So I kind of like second wave positive psychology a little better, because it's like at least acknowledging that there's negativity and there's a dark side of life, and you can get you can find sustainable well-being through overcoming your suffering and through your trauma. There is a third wave positive psychology that emphasizes going beyond the individual to take a deeper look at the groups and systems in which we live. It also promotes becoming more interdisciplinary and multicultural, and incorporates more methodologies. There's four specific things to focus on in third wave positive psychology. The focus of inquiry, becoming more interested in emergent paradigms like systems-informed positive psychology, which incorporates principles and concepts from the systems sciences to optimize human social systems and the individuals within them. So looking at like your socio-cultural background to see what, like, it would be like for us, like the Mormon Church. Does that make sense? So like, and like what has, like, yeah, our background is that, and the what are the paradigms that and the core values that we grew up with that we are carrying with us. Does that make sense? Disciplines becoming more multi and interdisciplinary as reflected in hybrid formulations like positive education, which combines traditional education and research-based ways of increasing happiness and overall well-being. Cultural context becoming more multicultural and global. I feel like I'm definitely more like aware of multicultural stuff and global things ever since leaving the church.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you can actually, it's so narrow-minded when you're in the church, because the only people worth knowing or talking about are other church members, unfortunately, right? Like, yeah. How many times do you, I don't know if you experience this, but I for sure experience this. I speak to my parents and it's conversations focused around the same 14 mm-hmm. families that we've known forever. There's never a discussion of like world events or,
thank
God, because my parents and I have a lot of different views on like world events that are happening. But it's very narrowly focused on just like people we have in common. And like my husband says all the time, he's like, Mormons gossip so much. And I'm like, it's because that's all they can talk about is other people. Like they have no broader anything. Like we don't talk about, you know, music or politics or arts or, you know, it's always, did you hear that so-and-so's daughter who married so-and-so's son have, like, that's all it is.
Yeah.
All they care about. It's
and they live in a bubble, and not just physically, but like psychologically, they live in a bubble. So when we talk about the Mormon bubble, it's not just about like a geographical location like Utah, Idaho, the Mormon corridor of like all the way down to Arizona, you know, it's and up into Canada. it's definitely in like a social and like psychological bubble that they live in. Let's see. So there are some criticisms just of, and I think we've basically touched on all like the criticisms of positive psychology, that like there's a narrow focus, that the positive psychologists like bury their head in the sand and ignore the depressed, even merely unhappy people have real problems that need dealing with. So like, and then also there's positive illusions that protect people from negative feedback that they might receive, and this in turn preserves their psychological adaptation and subjective well-being. However, later research found that positive illusions and related attitudes lead to psychological maladaptive conditions such as poor social relationships, expressions of narcissism, and negative workplace outcomes, thus reducing the positive effects that positive illusions have on subjective well-being, overall happiness, and life satisfaction. So and then also the toxic positivity side of it, just of like you can go too far with positive psychology and completely. And it's interesting because toxic positivity it's been around for like the concept of it has been around as early as 1980. There's a Google trend of it going up exponentially and spiking in 2020. Interesting. But anyway, that's we've already talked about toxic positivity and like its effects, so that's pretty much positive psychology. And it just,
that was really interesting.
Yeah,
so basically we all need to stop no, I'm just kidding. I was right. Be negative. No, I'm just kidding. Fuck Pollyanna's Glad Game. Anybody who's seen that movie is probably like, what is she talking about?
What is the old movie? It's been, But I grew up with that movie too, but I always liked that movie, but I also, I don't know. for me, it was like, I just remember having, like, getting, like, so, like, worried about her when she broke her legs and stuff, you know, just like, oh, it's so scary, you know, like, that to me as a child was, like, scary. But, yeah, and
running into a child who was always happy was scary to me.
she would not last in this society.
I would have bullied the shit out of her.
Pollyanna, where she's like, it's a glad game, and then she gets beat up. I'm not condoning bullying or, you know.
Shut up, Pollyanna. No.
I also probably should have said this at the beginning, but we are not experts. This is all just, like, I got this from Psychology Today and a lot of my information from Wikipedia, and I am not condoning, like, you take what you can and want from what we just talked about, but I am not an expert. So
yeah, there's therapies that work for some people and don't work for other people. Like, what was that one we were talking about with the tapping?
Oh, the EDMR? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I experienced an EDMR type of therapy, and it's not for me. Nope. Not for me. So, yeah. But it's really helpful for some people. So you got to just take what, like, works for you specifically and just go with it.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the big thing I highly recommend for all ex-Mormons, I think everybody needs therapy, but I think especially ex-Mormons need therapy because there's a lot to unravel.
There is, yeah. And find you a good trauma-informed therapist that can understand the nuance of you've been fucked up since you were born.
Yeah. Oh, for real. It's
Like, I have an incredible trauma-informed therapist, and it's so... The difference between her and other therapists that I've seen is only in a few sessions is vastly different. Just coming from this place of, like, acceptance and support is just incredible. So
just might do that. All right. Well, positivity. Yay.
Go play the glad game.